The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour two of a numbers game taking you through this Wednesday morning, February 19th, alongside Kelly Bidlin. I'm Joe Serralo, and I'm excited to take things back over to our progressive guest line here as we welcome in VSiN's own. You catch him daily, almost daily, JVT, on VSiN Primetime. I could never keep up with the schedule with the little three-man rotation you Tim and Matt have going on there. But man, welcome to the show. Appreciate you hopping on.
The little three-man rotation. Appreciate that. Yes, I am on pretty much daily. The only day I'm not on is Thursday. Correct.
Okay, so a staple in your VSiN primetime viewing. JVT, a lot of college hoops action tonight. Obviously, the NBA second half does tip off. We'll call it the diet tip-off, the tip-off light with one game, and then really gets jam-packed that NBA slate tomorrow. Starting in college, though, the SEC game I feel like everyone's talking about is Alabama-Missouri, rightfully so, but there's a lot of other action in that conference going on tonight. Which game do you have circled?
Yeah, I think Kentucky and Vandy's obviously pretty fascinating here. We're looking at only about 4.5 in favor of Kentucky. We know that Lamont Butler is still hurt. We know that Jackson Robinson is still hurt. Both are not going to play here in this game. But you know, I feel like we're getting kind of cheap here on Kentucky, especially when you're talking about 4.5, Joe. Like, I don't think it's a surprise that Kentucky is injured. We knew that this was going to happen coming into this game, but markets come down from 5.5, 6 in some spots, as low as 4.5, as I mentioned. It's really painted across the board. I know DK's starting to dip as well. I think that this is one where maybe you sit back and see how cheap this gets, but if this gets a little bit lower, look, even with the two injuries, I would say Kentucky still rates as a better team than Vanderbilt. And the number right now would tell you maybe there's a point difference depending on what you rate home court here for Rupp Arena at this point right now. So I'm going to be monitoring this to see if this gets a little bit lower. But Kentucky, even with the injuries, I think should definitely be on the viewpoint here. We know what Vandy is. We've seen them at home. They have had some pretty good moments. But again, from a rating standpoint, this really sticks out to me that this is getting cheap with Kentucky, even with the injury. So I will be monitoring to see if this gets to that 4, 3.5 mark. And if we get to 3.5, I'll be on Kentucky.
John, you're one of the network's Mountain West Conference experts. Where are you looking at there tonight?
So there's two games that are worth mentioning here. The first, the 737, 738, to give Matt Eumanns right to the rotation. You got to find it.
You and Jim Rue today, making the fans happy.
Yeah, of course, you got to do it. San Jose State's on the road against Utah State, and they're catching 19.5 now at some spots against the Aggies. And look, San Jose State is very injured. Their top two scorers have been missing the last two contests, so it's been a little bit of an issue. But guys, if you remember against Nevada without their top two scorers, they pushed Nevada in the first half, let go of the rope in the second half, ended up getting smoked by the Wolfpack. But I think they were trailing or leading by two at the break on Friday night against the Wolfpack here. Yep. And then, of course, without their top two scorers, pushed San Diego State to the brink. So now we're up to 19 here against Utah State. And we don't know whether or not these guys are going to be available tonight, but I feel like, again, San Jose State, at the very least, you might be able to look at this team in the first half and get a pretty good effort from this squad. They're very well coached. Tim Miles is an awesome head coach. He's done a great job with the team that doesn't really have that much. They're the best cover team in the country. As you see, they're right there, 18-6-1. And part of that is the way that they are coached and their scheme. So I really do like the San Jose State squad. I want to see where this gets to and monitor the injury report to see whether or not you're going to get a Duje out there for sure, as well as his teammate. So I think that this is definitely worth looking at here, San Jose State against Utah State. That's such a big number. Will McClendon, the other name that you should monitor. And then really quickly, I'm going to bring this up because I'm on with Mitch today on Follow the Money, filling in for Paulie. New Mexico and Boise State. Boise State's now 4.5-point favorite, total of 152.5. Again, if we go by pure market, like, hey, where do you rate these two teams under neutral? I would say this number is a little out of whack because this would tell you that Boise State's rates slightly better on a neutral court. I don't believe that to be the case. I love this New Mexico team. They've been running very hot, although the last two games they've needed comebacks against Wyoming and Utah State to get it done. But situationally, and this is, I think, the interesting aspect, it makes much more sense to play Boise. New Mexico has been running hot. Boise's playing their first home game in 2 weeks, have not been playing particularly well, coming off of a beatdown at the hands of San Diego State on the road against the Aztecs. They're a much better home team than they are on the road. And I think the market's overvaluing the situation, and we have so many different spots throughout the year, guys, where the market has been too heavy on these situational spots. Last night's a good example. You know, Villanova got up to a 10-point underdog at one point yesterday. They closed about 8.5. Never really got into it. You never really were threatened until that final possession in terms of not covering that number. And I think this is one of those, again, where as much as I love this Boise State spot, I thought this is going to be more like 2.5, and we're up to 4.5 in some spots. And I'd be very much maybe trying to push against the grain here, despite the negative situational spot for the Lobos.
Yeah, I thought this would be closer to a pick 'em too. How about the job the other Patino is doing at New Mexico this year? St. John's and New Mexico, both Patino-led squads, both 22-4 this season. That'll be a good story to see come March if maybe they get placed in the same quadrant of the bracket. JVT, before we hit the NBA, one last game I wanted to get your thoughts on. Alabama, Missouri. Saw last night Bama was favored by a point and a half in some shops, now pretty much universally catching 1.5 coming off the loss against Auburn. They are 3-0 against the number after a loss this year. What are your thoughts about this game?
You know, I really like this Missouri squad a lot, and I think they deserve a little bit more respect here at home, Joe. And like, look, I think Alabama is a very good team. Obviously, they've been treating teams relatively well. I think, though, we saw some of the flaws for this team defensively when you looked at that Auburn game over the weekend. In SEC play, they're ninth in defensive efficiency. They're giving up about 106.7 points per 100 possessions. I think they have some flaws on that end that can be exposed against some high-end offensive teams. And you're getting that here with Missouri, a team that is top 10-ish when you're talking about offensive rating in the country, a team that can spread the floor, shoot the ball extremely well, moves the ball around too. I really like what Missouri brings to the table, and I do think that you deserve a little bit more respect here at home. And I would say this too, again, talking about these situations, I mean, I wouldn't want to just blindly bet Alabama here on the bounce back, and I think that was initially rated here into this number. I think the market's getting this right and pushing this back down, and I know it's only Georgia, but I was really impressed with Missouri over the weekend. It was a 3-point deficit for them at the half. They smoked the Bulldogs in the second half on the road. This is a team that I think is formidable. I think you can argue they're the third best team here in the SEC, and that demands a little bit more respect. And for Alabama, I think big picture too, just really quickly, this stretch that they're going to go on, very big in determining what this one seed's going to be for them. They're like minus 350 the other day to get a one seed, but I would be very much looking at Houston to maybe kind of snatch that from them down the stretch, because their schedule, Missouri, Kentucky, Miss State, which, by the way, big win for them yesterday, looked very formidable. Tennessee, Florida, and Auburn, it's going to be a gauntlet for them to end the year, and I think that you could get them to slip from that one seed status.
John, NBA back in action tonight. I've added a couple things over the break. Any futures bets or win totals or awards or anything like that that you've bet here over the past week?
No, so I did bet. There's not really much that I bet from a futures perspective, Kelly. I have this win total contest that I have entered out here in Las Vegas, and you're in it too.
Yeah.
So I'm very,
check
like,
in on that.
yeah. So, dude, I have like a spreadsheet that's like on all the win totals. I'm tracking them all and everything like that. But like, I'm very much invested. And then the win totals that I've actually got that are going to be really sweats. But I will say this, because I heard you the other day, and I do think that is very much worth looking at. Toronto, I completely agree with what you were talking about the other day. They're a team that I think wants to win, that is going to push the pedal on this. They're not going to be one like Philly that I think now is going to, you know, I keep saying get bleep or get off the pot when it comes to this top six protected pick. I think it's time that they're going to bleep, right? I think they're going to crap it, and they're going to go down to the tank and willingly try to get this top six protected selection, while Toronto's going to make this push. And I would very much think they agree with you over on a win total. I think it's a sneaky, now it's going to be it's going to have to be a grind here, Kelly, but if we're right about Philly and Chicago is terrible, you can find Toronto at like 12-1 to participate in the Eastern Conference play-in. I think that's going to be an interesting sweat down the stretch, because I think they're going to try to push for that. And if Ingram comes back at some point, they can absolutely push for it. So I think Toronto's there, and I'll mention this really quickly. I brought this up to Paul too. I have Atlanta to make the playoffs at about 2-1 from a couple of months ago. They're playing much better. I would also very much recommend 5 or 6-1 to win the Southeast Division. That division sucks. They are all within a half game of each other, and yet it is Orlando who is the favorite. It is Miami who is above them, too. They're near picks to win that division. And then here you have Atlanta in much better competitive form down the stretch into the All-Star break. I think that when you look at three teams all within a half game of each other, I'll take the team that has been playing a little bit more competitive basketball heading into the All-Star break at 6-1, when I don't think there's that much separating those three in that division.
Yeah, this guy next to me has been trying to talk me into that bet for a week now.
All week. I mean, you got plus 105. I mean, the last I saw on DraftKings, Orlando plus 105, Miami plus 160, Atlanta like 9-2. I mean, you know, you got to go for it.
Yeah, and I added yesterday Raptors. I went back to bed and again after the show, and that number had run out already. So I did add 30 plus wins at plus, I think it was like 3-1, something like that. I'm with you though. Like I got close to the play-in tournament price. I can't bash anybody who wants to go there with that. Games going. We got the Lakers and Hornets in action tonight, and then big slate tomorrow. Any bets that you've made so far, either tonight or looking ahead to tomorrow?
I mean, I haven't made this yet because I'm going to monitor the injury report. And we know that LeBron got everybody mad because he didn't participate in the All-Star game. But I think, look, Charlotte, I might regret this, but I think that this Lakers team is going to be pretty bad on defense. I think we've seen examples of that in the two games right before the All-Star break, right? Utah in the first matchup out in LA ends up getting over their team total there. In the second half has an offensive rating of 118. And then in the rematch in Utah right before the break, they absolutely smoke them, drop 130, offensive rating of about a 132 or something like that. I think that this is going to be a problem for LA. And so I don't know if I trust them laying these big numbers, even against lesser opponents like Charlotte. Charlotte, too, got a positive injury report. Looks like LaMelo Ball is going to be out there. Mark Williams, despite the fact that the Charlotte Hornets don't want him, is going to be available as well. And there's no real threat at center that is going to tear him up like Anthony Davis did. If you remember, what was it, 2 or 3 weeks ago, when Anthony Davis ripped him a new one, and then the Charlotte Hornets had to come back, sneak inside of that number. I think this team could be pretty competitive here. So a 12 seems like a big number, but again, I would sit back and wait. If LeBron's going to get upgraded, then you can sit there and grab maybe 13 by the time this thing gets to that point where we're going to get to tip off. But I think the Hornets are going to be pretty live here tonight.
JVT, real quick, like 15 seconds or less. Phoenix, their live total is 40.5 wins. They'd have to go 15-13 to go over that. Do you stay under? Kelly and I are both into that under.
I mean, they've burned me already. I have them to win 55-plus games, so I'm going to say under. I hate them.
Oh, wow. JVT, great stuff, man. Really appreciate you hopping on.
Good to talk to you guys. Thanks.
Make sure you catch him today on Follow the Money coming up at, 1 Pacific, 4 Eastern. More NBA Western Conference win total talk on the other side. He's Kelly Bidlin. I'm Joe Serallo. It's a numbers game.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
VSiN fans, it is time to plan your Las Vegas getaway. Circa Las Vegas owner Derek Stevens is offering you 15% off at three incredible properties: Circa Las Vegas, the D Hotel, and the Golden Gate. Whether you're lounging by Circa's stunning rooftop pool, stadium swim, taking in the games on the big screen, or enjoying all the excitement and some of the craziness that downtown Las Vegas has to offer, you'll save big with the promo code VSiN15. Book your stay now at CircaLasVegas.com and use the code VSiN15 to get 15% off. Your Vegas adventure starts here. You know, Kelly, I'm curious, as the numbers game continues alongside Kelly Bidlin, Joe Serallo here, what was your first Fremont Street experience like? I mean, you've been some time now.
Yeah,
right?
That's a good question, because it was before I ever lived out here, so I definitely don't remember it.
You'd been to Fremont Street before this job?
Yeah, before I moved
out never
here.
Came
yeah.
to, so I had only been to Vegas twice before working for VSiN. And then, you know, it'd been a strip each time. I'd never been to Fremont Street until I started here when I started part-time last April.
Yeah, I'll tell you, man, for people that still come to town or wonder about it, maybe you come like Joe, like where you're coming in to go into the strip all the time, and that's right. All you're staying, you're not going downtown, check out Fremont. I mean, especially if you're coming into town to have a good time, maybe have a few cocktails. Believe me, every time I have friends visit Joe, it's stay on the strip, gamble way too much, spend way too much. Oh no, I'm broke by like my last final days. And then it's come down here on Fremont on Friday or Saturday night and get the, you know, like 40-ounce cocktails that they're giving out outside, you know, like, I don't know what it is, like a quadruple shot
right. Or
whatever. And you spent like half as much as you did on the strip.
The strip, to me, I don't know. I feel like the strip's quite a bit overrated.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, it's great hotels, amazing restaurants, but it's a party on Fremont. Friday, Saturday night, you cannot go wrong with the party out on Fremont.
And I'm a big live music guy.
Yeah, and that's fun.
As long as you can
too.
Look past, you know, the nun who's got the strategically placed cutout holes and the pasties on, I will say the live music element of Fremont Street is fantastic. There's always
really
three
is.
Free concerts going on at any time.
Yeah, I believe the way that works, too, is all the downtown hotel casino owners kind of pitch in to help draw people down here, which is really cool.
It's amazing.
You know, I mean, see, the strip hotels are not working with each other, that's for sure.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of free entertainment. Right, you know, every night you got three free concerts. It's a good deal. Kelly, let's swing back into these Western Conference win totals, because you had quite a few on your radar. Mm-hmm. I believe we only got to, what did we get to? The Lakers and then Phoenix briefly. JVT was pretty funny talking about Phoenix and well, how they burned a lot of people. I thought Phoenix would win the division preseason. JVT and Zach Cohen were both big on that, and I'm not the biggest NBA guy, so I kind of listened to them, did my own research after, confirmed what they were saying, and I think a lot of people went that route.
Yeah, they're, I guess, a slightly more toast than me with Phoenix than I am with Milwaukee, but if you heard what JVT said at the end there, he does lean to the under with us at the current number.
Yeah.
And that's kind of me with Milwaukee. Like, I brought the Bucks up yesterday. If current win total numbers, where would I kind of look to? They were probably the second most attractive one in the East to me, was to play the under, but I've got an over 48.5 that I'm sweating out from preseason. So right. I'm not going to go make a bet where I might end up middling myself, because there's potential to lose both of those bets.
What's their live total? 46.5?
Something like that.
So with your luck, they'd finish 47-35.
Exactly. And that is not something I'm looking to get into, Joe. So yeah, I'll just be rooting on Milwaukee. But yeah, as far as the other Western Conference teams, it did stick out to me. Minnesota, I'll start there. I'm going to save my favorite for last. Minnesota over 46.5. This is a tough one. This team I've been trying to, I've bounced back and forth kind of all season, Joe, whether I'm kind of high on this team, low on this team. I didn't like the Cat trade. I know that's kind of easy to say now, but I didn't like it when it happened. And then DiVincenzo got hurt, and you take another shooter out of the lineup that they were already struggling to find help from beyond the arc, and losing him was big. You wouldn't have him as great of a season as we're used to from him anyways. To start, you lost him. You lost Julius Randle out. Now, they will be getting these guys back at some point during the regular season. I'd like to say in the next couple of weeks, but we don't really know for sure on either. We're supposed to get updates here out of the All-Star break, and this is usually what happens. Teams go into the All-Star break a little bit murkier with some of their injury information, and then you get kind of a clearer idea once we get out of it. But they need to go over 45.5, to shop around. You find 45.5. This is another one. I liked it at 46.5, shopped around, found it for 45.5. You got to get 16 wins in your final 26 games to go over that mark. They will be getting DiVincenzo and Randle back at some point. They have the 26th toughest remaining strength of schedule, so it's not all that tough what they've got left. I think this team is a little bit better than what we've seen out of them this season. And I think once they get these reinforcements back, we're going to see that play out on the court. So it would be an over on the Timberwolves for me. That was one that stuck out for me, over the 45.5.
How concerned are you? And we talk about this a lot with Phoenix, for example, and you and I are both on the live under 40.5, excuse me. They go 14-14 the rest of the way. And that would land them on 40. So essentially, Phoenix to play 500 or worse. We talk about Phoenix's chemistry issues, right? Durant, Beal. How concerned are you, because you referenced that trade, about the chemistry in Minnesota? Because the talent is there.
Yeah.
But these guys, you know, when the trade was made, and look, I'm a Knicks fan, right? I actually wasn't thrilled because of the chemistry element. I loved Dante DiVincenzo, part of that Villanova crew with the Knicks. I loved Jules Randle and how tough he is and his style of play. I was down on the trade. Now, in hindsight, I mean, it was an incredible trade for the Knicks. But what are your thoughts on the chemistry in Minnesota and that being why they're not reaching their full potential?
Yeah, I think you're spot on with it. There's some issues there. They're still trying to figure out how exactly these guys are going to play together. I think Randle was always going to be a concern of how he would fit. I mean, we saw Karl-Anthony Towns game develop over the past couple of years with Anthony Edwards in there and him really buy into being this best big shooting big in the league. And that's really what he became. In the last couple of years, and for a guy to play with a guy like Anthony Edwards, and if you're going to have Rudy Gobert on the court, it's just you got to have guys that give you space and let Anthony Edwards operate in the paint, get to the basket, and that's a little bit more questionable when you have Julius Randle. And Joe, to answer your question, I don't really know that we've seen the answer to that one way or the other. But if anything, it's been the early returns are negative on what it looks like with all those guys out there. But I do think DiVincenzo being out is a big part of it, too. So getting both those guys back, you have the stretch run of the regular season to figure it all out. You know you're going to be a playoff team anyways. The Western Conference standings are all crazy bunched up right now. So no major concern right now, I think, if you're a Timberwolves fan or long-term backer. But it is going to be really interesting to see this rest of this regular season, how this team looks.
Yeah, Minnesota currently 31-25, sitting there in that 7 seed. If you had to guess today, would you say that they end up in the play-in or they end up safely in the top six?
I'm going to say end up safely in the top six.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think we just disagree over who they might jump. It seems like you think the Lakers. I'm leaning towards the Clippers in that respect. All right, how about your favorite of these plays? This is feeling like a Raptor-ish type of bet to me here. A team that, what have they won? 9 out of 10 going into the All-Star break? No expectations. You look at the roster, there's a lot of who? Through that roster, but yet somehow they're winning games and they're not tanking in a year when a lot of people thought they would and that they should.
Yeah, one of the teams that I looked at early on in the season, one of the worst teams in the NBA was the Portland Trail Blazers. You look since Christmas, middle of the pack, Joe. There, you're talking about a Portland team since Christmas that is, where I just had it, 14-12, 15th best net rating in that time, so really dead middle of the pack in the NBA, have struggled a little bit in that final week or two before the All-Star break, but we really saw them on a hot streak for a while. Look,
right, they lost three in a row going into the break.
Right,
yeah, prior to that, they had won 9 out of 10.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you're looking at a team, you're finding a win total at 30.5, and it's, you're right, this is feeling very Raptor-ish from yesterday. The only difference here is that they did recently suffer a pretty big injury, and that is DeAndre Ayton going out of the lineup for Portland. I don't think he's going to be back anytime soon, but this team's in the standings right now, 23-32 is their record. So you're looking at 30.5. All you need is 8 wins to go over that mark in their remaining 27 games. And they're kind of middle of the pack if you look remaining strength of schedule, all that. But with how this team has been playing over their overall arc since, you know, since Christmas, since the beginning of the year, it's been trending upwards. And they have enough depth that, I mean, look, DeAndre Ayton is not who DeAndre Ayton was when he was on the Suns team that made it to the NBA Finals. He's still having a good year. It sucks that he's out of the lineup. This would probably be a play for me if he was still going to be in there. But they still have enough depth and enough pieces on this team, Joe, that and Scoot Henderson's coming along. Some of these younger guys are coming along. I believe in them. And just to ask your 8 wins in your final 27 games, I'm on board here. This is my favorite in the West. It is the Trailblazers over 30.5.
Yeah, I mean, I like this one. Like you said, 8 wins in their last how many games? 27?
Yep.
I think that's a really, really doable proposition for this Portland team. I like the Raptors play, I like the Portland play in terms of overs, Phoenix in terms of unders. Final 30 seconds. If you're going to take an over with a top 2 seed, which do you like more, Thunder, Celtics?
That's a great question. I'll go Thunder, but I like both of them, actually.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I like both too. You know, I think this is a case where the market, and it's why, you know, I didn't shy away. Those were the two that last year at the All-Star break, I went over on their live total and both got home. And I think the market's going to try to make you say, 21-6, that's not realistic. And then, well, Boston went 21-6 their last 27 last year. I think both of these teams will get over their live respective totals this year. Going to talk some NBA awards and college hoops futures up next with Michael Montesano. It's a numbers game. He's Kelly Bedlin. I'm Joe Cirola.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Folks, sports betting never slows down, and neither should you. With the NBA and NHL in full swing, second halves resuming momentarily there, the PGA Tour underway, March Madness around the corner, and MLB opening day coming up, the action never stops. So start betting smarter with a VSiN Pro subscription. For as little as $9.99, you'll get a daily email with all the plays from hosts and their guests. Expert analysis, deep dive stats, and exclusive insights, too, to help you make the smartest picks. Don't place your bets unprepared. Get full access today for just $9.99 your first 30 days at VSiN.com/subscribe. A numbers game continues alongside Kelly Bidlin. I'm Joe Cirola, taking you through this Wednesday morning, February 19th edition of the program. And now, taking you back to our progressive guest line as we get ready to talk some NBA awards, some college hoops futures as well with our friend Michael Montesano. Mike, how you doing today? Thanks for hopping on.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Absolutely. I want to look at one particular awards market with you off the bat because I just don't think it makes a lot of sense to me, especially with all of the drama that has surrounded Jimmy Butler in South Beach this year and now getting an opportunity to kind of take the reins to this Miami Heat team. Let's talk most improved player. It seems like it's a two-man race between Cade Cunningham, -105 on the DraftKings odds board, Norm Powell catching $1.05. And then you look down the list and there's Tyler Hero all the way at 16 to one. Should he be priced shorter than this, given the fact that he is now, like I said, kind of taking the reins from Jimmy when it comes to this Miami team?
He definitely should be priced shorter. I mean, I think, you know, I think Kelly has mentioned it on the show. I took Hero at 50 to one a couple months back, and I think he was the favorite at one point. If you're just going to go look, I use three categories: the points per game increase, the PER, which player efficiency rating increase, and the win share increase, to kind of see where everyone is. And, you know, you're looking at Cade Cunningham, he's increased 2.7 points per game. Norm Powell has had a tremendous year, 10.3 points per game, and Tyler Hero, 3.1. If you look at player efficiency rating, the increase, Cade Cunningham, 2.9, Norm Powell, 5.5, and Tyler Hero, 3.3. But then when we go to the win shares, who's more important to their team, it's Cade Cunningham, plus 1.0, Norm Powell, plus 0.7, and Tyler Hero, plus 2.6.
Wow.
So I do think if there is, and I think that, you know, Hero's usage will increase over the next couple of months now that Butler is not there. He is worth a look at 16 to one right now. But if I'm going to give the winner as of today, the winner is Norm Powell. I mean, Norm Powell has gone from 13 points a game to 24 points a game. And I know his role has increased, but he, you know, a few years back, if you look back and when he was playing around the same minutes he is this year, I think he had like 1 year, he was averaging like 17 a game. So he's really improved his play a lot, and it's tough to overlook in this market, points per game and player efficiency rating. And Cade's already been a great player. I mean, I guess we can go back to the John Morant thing a couple of years ago, but I would give it as of today to Norm Powell, but I think Hero is going to close that gap as we go on.
Yeah, it is interesting, Michael. I agree with you. If I was jumping in right now, I do think if you wanted to bet some Hero at 16 to 1, I don't know that he's going to win it, but I think he gets more into the mix here down the stretch than the numbers currently indicate. The Norm Powell one is fascinating. He's the only guy, really, I don't have any exposure to on the board. You tipped me to Hero the one night we got into that together at 50 to 1. I'm in on Cade Cunningham for preseason. Norm Powell's the only guy I really don't have anything on. I know Gil does. You do. Should have joined you when you did. I don't know how they're going to handle his case, just because it's an interesting case that we don't often see. And I'm not saying right, wrong, bad. He should win, shouldn't win. It's just he is a guy that was just put in a position of coming off the bench for so long, and now a lot of it is just getting the minutes. And would I have guessed that he would have done it this well? And I've been a Norm Powell fan for so long. No, I wouldn't have. But I just don't know how voters are going to handle that. I think it's really interesting. Whereas over the past couple of years, we have seen how they handle cases like Cade Cunningham's, right?
Yeah, it's going to be difficult. But I think voters are simpletons, and they're just going to kind of go maybe look at that points per game or even play. I think one, you know, status player efficiency rating, and Powell's got a plus 5.5 in player efficiency rating. I mean, he's really improved. And like I said, a few years ago, if you go back and look at his numbers, he did play like 32 minutes a game and he was averaging like 17 points a game. So this is a nice step up from him, not only from those years, but from last year as well.
Yeah, 41 starts that year too. I think that is a good year to compare it to more recently when he was strategically being brought off the bench. Right. I think it's a great points all around. Let's go to defensive player of the year. I know this is one that you've been kind of tracking all year. Look, the odds say this is done. Wemby's won it and it's all over. Is there a bet here, or let me phrase it differently? Should this race be closer than what it is?
The race absolutely should be closer than what it is based on what happened last year. Okay, I was on Gil's show last year preaching to the choir about Wemby's on-off splits. Wemby's the best defensive overall player, and everyone kept going back to, well, he's not on a top-ranked defense. We can't give it to him because he's not on a top-ranked defense. Okay, so we fast forward to this year. He has basically the same counting stats as last year. Last year's counting stats were 13.2, and the counting stats are defensive rebounds per game, plus blocks per game, plus steals per game. He's up 0.9 from last year. His minutes have increased by 4. Okay, but his team has gotten worse from a month ago. They were 12th in team defensive rating a month ago. Now they're 22nd. His individual defensive efficiency rating is just where it was last year. He hasn't gotten any better. His defensive win shares has not gotten any better. His defensive blocks plus minus has not gotten any better. There are players that are above him in all these categories, but now we have ESPN, the voters at ESPN, they're all they're looking at, we're just going to give it to Wemby because he has the most blocks and this, that, and the other. And now I have to hear ESPN talking about on-off splits. Well, we were talking about on-off splits last year. Yeah. So if it didn't matter last year, it shouldn't matter this year. And you have a team in Oklahoma City that has two of the top defensive players in the league, and it's not Lu Dort. Lu Dort is not a top defensive player. He was given that reign by Chris Mannix and Doris Burke because he stopped Brown from Boston and Mitchell from Cleveland. They had two bad games when he covered them for most of the game. The top two defensive players in the league are Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Jalen Williams. If you even want to go further, we can go to Zubac from the Los Angeles Clippers. He's having a tremendous year. Amen Thompson having a tremendous year. Victor Wembanyama has the counting stats. He has not made his team better defensively this year, and they're only getting worse.
I love how adamant you are about the argument. You just mentioned SGA. Now, maybe not to the degree of the Defensive Player of the Year market where Wemby's a minus 2,000 favorite, but SGA does have a firm hold on this market for the MVP, -$5. Jokic, plus 350. Is that worth a bet?
Well, after the straw poll, that Tim Bontemps straw poll that just came out, I don't know if it's worth a bet, but I do. I think personally, I bet him plus 450 a few weeks ago. He's number one in player efficiency rating. And not only is he number one, he's having one of the greatest seasons of all time per the PER numbers. Go back 15, 20 years as of today. Now, could that change? Obviously, it can. He's number one in win shares. He's number one in win shares per 48 minutes. He's number one in box plus minus. And he's number one in value over replacement. You can go to all those. You can go to Basketball Reference and view all those numbers. Shai is number two in all them. But Shai is getting the votes because Shai leads the league in points per game. And he's on the best team. We always talk about the best team. But the best player is Nikola Jokic, and it's not even close. But unfortunately, I don't think he's going to win it this year, even though I just made a bet on him. I think, again, we have the group thinkers. They're all talking about Shai. But if you look at the numbers, all the numbers, Jokic is the MVP. But again, this would be 4 and 5 years. We could have voter fatigue with that.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say there's definitely voter fatigue. It's amazing to be averaging a triple-double and people just, they're like, well, that's expected at this point. Expected greatness often goes unnoticed. Final minute here, Michael. How about some college hoops futures? What are you into in that market?
Yeah, I have two to make the Final Four. I mean, I have a portfolio to win national championships. No one wants to hear what numbers I got with Alabama and Florida and Kentucky. No one wants, you know, so I'm not talking, but I'm going to say as of today, to make the Final Four, Florida plus 165. It looks like per Joe Leonardi, they're going to ship them out. They're going to ship them out west. If you look at the top four seeds, I like them. Now, a nice underdog, a nice price is Michigan State 10-1. If they are put in the East with Duke, I think they have an excellent shot. It's one of Izzo's best offensive teams he's had in several years. And we all know Izzo magic in March. He has the defensive rating. And again, it's just to get to the Final Four. They're 10-1 at DraftKings. I like both of those numbers today.
Wouldn't be the first time Izzo ended Duke season in March. They took down that Zion-led team, of course, some years back. Mike, really appreciate the time. Thanks so much for joining the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Michael Montesano with us there, talking NBA awards markets and some college hoops Final Four futures as well. We'll get into my college hoops action. Best bets up next. He's Kelly Bedlin. I'm Joe Serralo. It's a numbers game.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Numbers game continues, taking you through your Wednesday morning. He's Kelly Bedlin. I'm Joe Serralo. Kelly, I saw you throw back that the remainder of your coffee there before we came back.
There's still a nice cold sip left or something like that.
What's your typical coffee order? Does it switch? Do you just go with whatever you're feeling?
It switches. This is an Americano today. is what we're rolling with. Yeah, that would be my usual.
An Americano, the fancy way of saying espresso with a lot of hot water.
Yeah, with hot, gross water sometimes. Yeah.
You know, a bad Americano is brutal.
A bad Americano is very bad.
Reminds me of, did you ever, I know we're slightly different generations here. Did you ever watch Monsters, Inc.?
Yeah, I've seen Monsters, Inc.
I wasn't sure if I was too youngin' for you.
Man, Joe's really going off the rails here this last break. He's calling out the crew, demanding a coffee maker in the bag.
No, I'm saying the crew deserves
an espresso. Sounds like to me, Joe.
Hold on. I was saying the crew deserves a Nespresso machine back there, all right? We got a lot of people working early mornings, late nights.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just think a TV station, it's like, hey, how is there not an espresso back there?
Yeah, we got such a ginormous newsroom with so many people operating out of, you know.
I think an espresso machine would be a good thank you to
us. As Brendan pointed out, he's got a little kettle over there. The electric kettle.
So that's how I do my coffee. I do the pour over.
Okay.
It's a little more time consuming, but it's the best taste. And I'm a bit of a snob because I drink my coffee black, first coffee of the day. And then my second coffee, I'll add a little sweetener. But first one of the day is black.
Okay, so you start with just black, and then you'll add some.
Because I intermittent fast.
Okay.
So if you're fasting, you can drink black coffee, no calorie, like 10 calories, 15 calories. Yeah. I think you got to stay under 40 is the threshold. So, 32 ounces of water as soon as I wake up, then black coffee. And that's how the day starts.
Okay. Well, don't worry. All we got is 10 more minutes, and then we're going to go out to that nice buffet they're throwing just for you, I heard.
I know. You know, it's so weird.
Derek came to me yesterday. He's like, don't tell Joe, but this surprise buffet.
This is all
buffet.
About him. Yeah, this is all thank for you him. For waking up at 5 a.m. for two straight weeks. I'll tell you, this is throwing off my whole fasting thing, doing the morning show, because we leave here, and it's like, oh, I've already been up for 4 hours. When I do cashing out, I'm waking up in the middle of money moves. You know, no offense. I'll catch the replays to a numbers game, but I'm fast asleep during a numbers game.
Yeah, no offense to and I'm fast asleep by the time your show starts.
Exactly.
So yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You're like, and if I wasn't asleep, Joe, you put me to sleep. Let's get to some best bets. Best bets brought to you by GBank, of course, the official bank of VSiN. Gonna have a little disclaimer here on my first bet because I think that this was entered incorrectly. SMU, I believe it was taken as Southern Mississippi here on your screen. Southern Methodist. So it's an ACC matchup with my first play here. Southern Methodist laying 1.5. I believe that might be a 2 now. At Notre Dame, the Irish have failed to cover 6 straight, just 1-4 straight up in their last 5. League worst, 4-8 against the number at home. 5-9 against the number in conference play. SMU's won 5 out of their last 6. 4-2 against the spread is an away favorite. Highest powered offense in the conference. So there we go. I think we fixed that as we'll get that thrown up on your screen. SMU laying 1.5 against Notre Dame. And then the other 3 plays we ran through already, Missouri Valley action, Illinois, Chicago catching 10 and a hook at Drake, Bradley -1 at Illinois State, Bama catching 1.5 at Mizzou. Kelly, what do you got on your best bet card for the day?
Yeah, nothing for tonight, but 2 NBA plays I did add since we last talked yesterday. I did add that 30-plus wins on the Raptors at +280 like that. And then one bet already for tomorrow in the account, Blazers catching 5. They will have the Lakers coming off of their game against the Hornets tonight coming into town. That's sitting like 4, 4.5. But look around today if that hits 5 again. I think it's a good number to jump in on. And honestly, Joe, as we talked about with the win totals earlier, if you are betting this like I am, we probably should be sprinkling a little on their over on their win total anyways, because all they need is 8. If I like the game tomorrow night already, then okay, you should probably be thinking about that a little bit harder.
Absolutely. We'll get to Jim Root, joined us from the 3-man weave, of course, back in hour 1. He's got some college hoops action. If you folks think I get frisky with the mid-major stuff, how about this? We're talking the Summit League. We're talking the Horizon League. He's got St. Thomas laying 3.5 at South Dakota. I was on South Dakota with a best bet last week. We got home. I actually love this spot and love this play. I was looking at St. Thomas myself. IU Indy, also formerly known as IUPUI, catching 1. It's practically a pick'em spot at Detroit. And then the Johnnies, St. John's, laying 12.5 at DePaul in Chicago. Believe that might be up to 13 right now. St. John's, one of the most stifling defenses in the country. JVT, some best bets, both Mountain West action. San Jose State, Kelly, this opened 16.5. Now they're catching 19 against Utah State. New Mexico, Richard Pitino's son. So we have both Pitinos covered here, catching 4.5 at Boise. I agree with JVT wholeheartedly there that number was just a little out of whack. And then to parrot JVT's sentiment, if Kentucky gets down to 3.5 at home against Vandy. Injuries and all, he said he would lay the 3.5 with Kentucky. Michael Montesano gave out some futures. Florida to make the Final Four, plus $1.65. Sparty, Michigan State, Tom Izzo's squad, 10-1 to make the Final Four. He said he was specifically looking to see if they could draw Duke, a team that Izzo has some experience bouncing in March Madness. Folks, Best Bets brought to you, of course, by GBank. GBank's up in the ante with up to a $750 bonus for new GBank Visa Signature Card customers. First, new customers who spend a grand on eligible purchases within 90 days from account opening receive a $250 bonus. In addition, if you spend 50 grand on gaming and sports app loads within the 30 days of your account opening, you'll receive another $500 bonus. That's potentially a $750 bonus. Apply now, vsin.com/gbank. That's vsin.com/gbank. Subject to credit approval. Terms and conditions do apply. Kelly, it's hump day. No better way to celebrate, my man, than going country clubbing.
Let's go.
Never gets old.
It is great.
I remember when I saw it for the first time, I was like, wow, all the old people playing in their drinks. That's amazing.
PGA Tour heads south of the border, going down to Mexico for the Mexico Open. West Coast swing is over. We're headed to Florida next week. We got the Mexico Open in between. No, this is not the best field you're going to see this year. In fact, it is one of the worst fields that you're going to see on the PGA Tour.
I know one person.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
I know Akshay Bhatia.
If you're not betting golf regularly, there is a lot of people on this odds board you are not going to recognize. That is very fair. It's a full field event, though. 132 players, top 65 in ties will make the cut. Still at Vedanta Vallarta, that is where they are playing this fourth year now. Where they have played this, Jake Knapp, Tony Finau, John Rahm, winners the past 3 years. Bright, 19 under for Knapp last year. Finau was 24 under, 17 under the year before that for John Rahm. So we will see guys go low here. Won't be a complete birdie fest, though. As you said, Akshay Bhatia is the short shot in the market. Around 14-1 is where you're going to find him for this event. He's been playing great golf recently. I really, really like his season outlook. I completely understand the number on him. This is, if you're handicapping this at home, this is one of the longest courses on the PGA Tour, seventh longest, I believe it is. It is the longest collection of par fours and par fives on the PGA Tour that these guys will play. So you are looking for a combination of guys that are long off the tee and very, very good with long iron play. 62% of your approach shots are going to come from 175 yards or more. Over 40% of those will come from over 200 yards. So we're looking really for that combination of guys that are both long off the tee, but then also good from those long approach ranges. Not a huge card for me this week, but you know, as I gave Wes a little bit of guff earlier in the week, if you're going to get to his level and hit three in a row, Joe, you got to start. It starts with one that happened last week. So we're looking for two now. Number two starts now. Okay?
Kelly, in full transparency, if you told me you had a loaded card this week, I'd be like sliding over the paper. Hey, 1-800-GAMBLER. I mean, I don't know any of these guys. Yeah. I might put a little something on Stefan Jaeger just because when he crushes one off the tee, do they yell, Jaeger bombs?
No, everybody does. Everybody does. It's a great name. Yeah, so I got four outrights on the card. That's all I'll play. Playing this week. Taylor Moore starts me off 26-1. Not the greatest approach numbers recently. The only thing that's holding me back from being a little bit more in love with this play, his game should fit here perfectly, though. Third off the tee in the field, fourth in par five scoring, ninth in bogey avoidance, eighth in driving distance. Kind of checks all the boxes, but some concerns with the irons recently has me backed off a little bit. So just an outright play on Taylor Moore. Favorite golfer this week, I use him for one and duns too, is Kevin Yu. 35-1 on an outright play, and then played him in top 20 market as well at plus 160. Look, just really going off of really recent form here. Past couple weeks, T17 at the Genesis, T16, the Waste Management Phoenix Open, which have at least sort of some comps to where the course that they're going to be playing this week. You look at what he's doing off the tee, though. Weighted strokes gained off the tee, 18th in this field. He's 9th on approach, 14th in birdie or better. And he is top 5 in both of those proximity ranges that I was talking about for the long iron play. So really like Kevin Yu this week. Played him in the outright market and then top 20. Alex Smalley, 40-1. That is a very popular play you will see this week. Played an outright on him as well. Another guy whose game should fit perfectly here. And then a longer shot for me, Alejandro Tosti, 115-1. Matt Brown peer pressure on this one because I am not missing out on Alejandro Tosti's first win. This is like the Nick Kyrgios of the PGA Tour. This guy gets in trouble all the time. Long Shots full episode up on YouTube, up over at VEASAN YouTube, up on all your podcast feeds right now. So check that all out. Me, Matt, and Wes go through the entire events.
Kelly, fantastic stuff. The only thing that I can agree with that you just said, because it's the only thing I know about firsthand, Matt Brown peer pressure. It's a real thing. It's a real thing. Stick around, folks. Money Moves up next. Stormy Bonantoni, Grace Remington with you for the next 2 hours. You don't want to miss it. He's Kelly Bidlin. I'm Joe Serrallo. That does it for a numbers game. Talk to you mañana.